Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello and welcome to another astonishing edition of the Game Day Preview podcast from TalkSport with me, Sam Matterface. This week, bonfires have been all the rage. Expect more heat at Anfield as Pep fans the flames ahead of a meeting of the top two on Sunday. Fireworks promised at the King Power where explosive Leicester take on Unai Emery's Gunners, who need a rocket up their arsenal. Palace, who looked like they were lit at the start of the season, have seen their spark stubbed out by back-to-back home defeats. They go to the Bridge to take on Roman's Candles. Plus, an incendiary derby between Wolves and Villa, Burnley against Wilting West Ham, Newcastle, Bournemouth, Spurs, Sheffield United, Norwich, Watford and Southampton, Everton. It's Game Day from TalkSport.
This is Game Day, Premier League Preview Show.
And in the studio this week, exploding in all directions, Alex Crook. Hello, how are you?
I'm good, very well.
And exploding out of his trousers.
All right, we're 90 seconds in and there's the first dig.
There you go. And someone who knows from his playing days that once it's gone off, you don't return. Certainly explains the number of moves he has as a player. David Connolly, how are you?
I'm very well. Similar to you, I think, in the media world, Sam, maybe.
An exciting week, so let's not hold back any longer.
Finding Salah now with a burst into the penalty area. He's checked away from me. Firmino with a low shot. Brilliant. And on a day of records, Roberto Firmino becomes the first Brazilian to score 50 Premier League goals. Liverpool unstoppable.
Now Walker. Bernardo Silva again. It's lovely play to pick out the run of De Bruyne. And it's clipped in for Aguero. And that is absolutely magnificent from Manchester City. Tottenham were picked apart.
Van Dijk onto Mane inside the area, into the top corner of the net, and Sadio Mane gets Liverpool back on terms. It's a well-crafted goal. Robertson was involved in it, but Mane applied the finishing touch.
Liverpool Man City is a 4:30 kickoff on Sunday. The game at Anfield last season was dull. Mahrez missed a late penalty, but this one's going to be anything but, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be fantastic. And you have to say, and it seems amazing at this stage of the season, what, we're in the first week of November. If Liverpool win, I think the title race is over. I just cannot see Manchester City making up that gap when you think they only lost one game last season, Liverpool. All right, they've rode their luck a little bit this season, but they just find a way to win. They're relentless, and I think it's a must win for Manchester City.
They find a way to win, but if they were to stop finding those ways to win at the end of games, and if you look back at the statistics and the matches that they've won in the last few minutes of games over the course of this season, there's been a lot of those late bits of drama which have turned in Liverpool's favour. When that stops happening, they will drop more points, won't they?
Liverpool?
Because they're not playing particularly... They haven't played anywhere near their best.
Well, possibly, but what I would say is last season, those games, they would draw. They wouldn't turn them into victories. So they drew seven. That cost them the title, not the defeats. And five of those were away. And this season, obviously, they're going away and they are getting late goals, whether it's, you know, your Leicesters of this world, your Sheffields, so, you know, your Villas. And they're able to do that, which they weren't doing last year. So whether they're leaving it late or not, I think Man City and Pep is under severe pressure.
Okay, so let's just concentrate on the leaving it late bit, because they've picked up 10 points from losing positions. Does that say that they've been lucky? It's to do with diving, as Pep Guardiola stirred it up with earlier in the week? Or is it the fact that actually they're a lot fitter than most other teams? They're a lot more tactically disciplined than a lot of other teams. And towards the end of games, when players are tired and they're losing their shape, they take advantage?
It's not luck. I mean, Manchester United did this for year on year under Alex Ferguson, particularly actually after they lost the league title to Leeds right at the start of the 90s. They won the league the following season. They scored twice, of course, in stoppage time, 7 minutes of stoppage time against Sheffield Wednesday. And I think the fact that Liverpool have come so close last season, they've just got that extra desire, that extra determination that it isn't going to slip from their grasp this time. But also that those comments from Pep, that to me smacks of a man under pressure. He knows his side have to win this game. The fact yourselves have just come from behind to win an important game, and within seconds of coming off the pitch, you've got a microphone thrust in front of you, and your first thought is to out Sadio Mane as a diver. I can see right through that.
Well, we had the conversation a couple of weeks ago when I played the interview that I did with him after the Crystal Palace game, a game that they had won once again, but yet he came out almost demanding that people give his team more respect, and he sounded then like a guy that was feeling the heat a little bit. Do you think that's the case?
Oh, I think he certainly is. But, I mean, if I go back to Liverpool just quickly, all those late goals you spoke about Fergie, it's almost Fergie time. It's almost Klopp time now, you know. And I was having this conversation with on TalkSport 2 about Klopp. And, you know, who's his closest sort of managerial counterpart in the Premier League? Well, it's not Pep. Pep is a field coach. Klopp is not a field coach. Klopp's a man manager. He is one of those, like a Alex Ferguson, that sort of type. He gets people in and around him who can obviously improve him, enhance him, whether it's, you know, Pep Lien as his coach, whether it's a throwing coach, all these sorts of people. He recognises, okay, I might not be the best field coach, right? But I might be a brilliant tactician. I might be a terrific man manager, you know, and there's a lot that goes into that, which will get you points at end of games. It's not all about sometimes, you know, that sort of technical practice on the training ground. So that's what I think is going in Liverpool's favour this year. Plus, they've got an additional couple of players that they really didn't have last year who are now fit. The Ox, obviously, getting four in four. Lallana's popping up. I know his form is still, he hasn't quite hit the heights, but he's still
but he's available.
Yeah, Origi. So they've got players in and around it. Keita. So they can mix things up.
And
so
they'll need all those. They'll need all those players because they've got to play at least two games in 24 hours in the next few weeks. Anyway, just focusing on Manchester City a little bit. I mean, Liverpool, 3 clean sheets in 18 now. They've got the players to take advantage of that, haven't they?
Of course they have. And I don't think it's going to be 0-0 this season, because I think what we've learned in the first dozen games or so is that both are probably more vulnerable defensively. City, because of their injuries. Liverpool, because they've changed their playing style slightly. Partly because of the invention of VAR, actually. They like to give a higher line now. I think Klopp's come out and said that. I just think, man for man, Liverpool look in a better position than me, better shape. City haven't convinced all season, even against Southampton. That wasn't a convincing performance.
OK, the fullbacks played a key role in that game against Southampton. Who plays in those positions at the weekend?
Well, that's an interesting one. I mean, I just wonder, would he do anything different, you know, in terms of at the back? Would he go to, as he has at times when he first came in, go to a back three? You know, would Walker, for example...
Has he got enough defenders to do that?
Well, I think he's got wing-backs, certainly. Could be Cancelo as a wing-back. Could be Mendy as a wing-back.
Could be Ancelino.
It could be Angelino, exactly. But I think that he's got it all to do, because when they've struggled, I think, City, it's been against real pace. And if you look at how, for example, Mane's playing, maybe not Salah, whose sort of form has dipped a little bit, you've got to say, but certainly Mane with his pace, if he can...
So playing Walker as part of the back three rather than playing him as a wing-back might be beneficial for them to try and stop that threat, to nullify that threat.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just wonder, he might try something different here. There's no David Silva, which I think is massive for them. Who will get a chance? Will it be Foden? Big call to go and trust him in there, but he's capable.
Manchester City are used to having more shots than a player's night out with Derby County. But remarkably, it took them until, what, minute 76 to have their first shot on target against Saints?
Yeah, despite the fact they were dominating possession. And you have to give Southampton a little bit of credit, especially when you think they conceded 9 in their previous Premier League game. They got men behind the ball. They worked a lot harder. They tried to restrict that space. So let's take our hat off for Ralf Hasenhüttl for that. But again, I just think it was an unconvincing Manchester City performance. There have been too many of those this season. We've spoken about it on the podcast before. I think Guardiola has a shelf life. I think he works the players very hard. And I think physically, they just seem to have dropped a level.
They were unconvincing in their defeats, but most of their performances, they've won for a start. And they've been pretty comprehensive in a lot of their games.
Well, you've got to remember as well, against Southampton, they set up, obviously, back five, go and break us down. Obviously, they got that first goal. Yeah. Suddenly, you got something to hold on to. And then it's quite hard to break them down. Obviously, they've had the 9-0 thrashing as well.
They played 10 men behind the ball.
It's not that hard to break Southampton down, believe
well,
me.
Well, look, when you've got that goal and you've got something to cling on to...
Well, they changed their goalkeeper as well, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, that had been coming, hadn't it? Crikey.
Are you still friends with Brian Gunn?
Do you know what? He hasn't tweeted me to defend his son for a while.
The story here is that about 6 weeks ago, Alex started
longer than that.
To,
it was the last game of last season.
All right. He started to criticise Angus Gunn, and he got into a spat with Angus Gunn's dad, Brian, former Scotland goalkeeper, Norwich goalkeeper, on Twitter, didn't you?
Yeah. He came back at me after a couple of tweets criticising Angus's goalkeeping, but I think anybody who's watched Southampton on a regular basis this season would know that I was right and Brian maybe have been a bit clouded.
Okay, let's move on to Saturday, 5:30, Leicester against Arsenal. I'll be there with Dean Ashton for game day on TalkSport. It's one of three live commentaries we've got for you this Saturday, available around the rest of the world on Premier League Live. The Foxes, the feisty upstarts, are at it again. Arsenal's gaffer has had a haircut, though, and started to wear his glasses in press conferences to try and make himself look more leadership. Are they still on the verge of something special, David Connolly?
Oh, absolutely. They are having a magnificent season.
But we're going to keep bringing this up, by the way, every single week. We even did it when you weren't here last week.
Oh, really?
Okay, a grittier performance by Leicester. And that's what Arsenal don't have, isn't it? I mean, Leicester, last week against Crystal Palace, had to dig in a little bit, had to take their time before creating and then scored a brilliant goal. I mean, the goal where Damari Gray jumps over the ball, it goes through into Jamie Vardy, first-time finish. It's a fantastic, well-worked goal. The perfect sort of goal that I think Brendan Rodgers will be walking around giving himself a little fist pump about afterwards. But they also have a sort of nastier side, a naughtier side as well. And those two centre-halves have been magnificent.
Yeah, Soyuncu in particular. Leicester fans were worried, rightly, when Harry Maguire was sold, but I think the biggest compliment you can play Soyuncu is they haven't missed Maguire at all. And Leicester really are everything that Arsenal aren't at this moment in time. They've got a manager who's got a clear plan, a clear direction. As you say, they've got their steely determination. They're scoring fantastic goals. Arsenal are a mess. And that, for me, is epitomised by this debacle with the captain's armband. Xhaka rightly has had it taken away from him. It's gone to Aubameyang.
But you say rightly. Why rightly? I mean, he's basically been abused on social media. He's lost his head. He hasn't had a particularly good season. He hasn't had a particularly good Arsenal career. But who has? I mean, ultimately, once you've nominated your captain, as soon as that you get to the first sign of trouble and you ditch him, that's not very good for your own standing amongst your players, is it?
No, and I think really this debacle is a sort of microcosm for what Arsenal are under Unai Emery. The fact, seemingly, that you put the captain's armband in a tombola, a lucky dip, and whoever picks it out gets it. It's not quite like that, but they've made a mockery of the armband. When you look at some of their previous captains, your Tony Adams, your Patrick Vieira, people who wore that armband with pride, real
same
leaders.
Same process as Pep used to get a captain at Manchester City. Though.
Yeah, I don't think it's done them any favours either, because I think since Kompany left Manchester City, there's been a lack of leadership on the pitch for them, and that's probably what will cost them a title at the end of the season. It's just a farce. I mean, you can tell me, David Connolly, have you ever been in a situation in a dressing room where the manager said, right, lads, you pick the captain? And also, why pick one of your worst players who you know the fans don't like anyway? I think they set him up for a foul.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see any justification really for trying to support Xhaka in his actions. I really don't. I mean, when you're subbed and you're being taken off, I look at other captains. Jordan Henderson, a lot of times, gets taken off. You know, he doesn't sulk, moan. He jogs off pretty quickly, hands his armband over, sits on the bench, as you should do. I mean, Xhaka, if he'd have sprinted off, I think this would have been all forgotten about, brushed under the carpet. But I think he made it more about him, really. And it wasn't. It was just about the team. And that frustration comes through from the fans, a little bit on him, but also about the team. They want more. They want better. So I would have taken all that with a pinch of salt, to be honest. Look, should he be stripped of the captaincy? I don't know. We can debate that till the cows come home. But I think it's the right decision.
Well, do you think it's the right decision to bring Mesut Ozil back into the team?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, he looks, you know, when he plays, he's on a different level to everyone else.
Sometimes he is.
Well, yeah, but I mean, sometimes is because what? You need to sometimes play. You can't just play and expect a 10 out of 10 performance every week when he hasn't really had the chance, opportunity to play. So I think actually the more he leaves him out, Unai Emery, and the more decisions that he has to make, the more worrying his management becomes, to be honest.
Well, his management's worrying anyway, isn't it? I mean, they have not improved since he took over the football club. They've actually possibly even gone backwards. They don't look like a team that's anywhere near challenging for the top four. If you look at the gap between fourth and fifth, it's 6 points. If you look at the gap between fifth and 16th, it's 6 points. That's how far they are away from the likes of Leicester, who they're playing this weekend, Chelsea, Manchester City and Liverpool.
But the stats will tell you that only Pepper's won more points than Unai Emery. So,
since when?
Well, I think that was since he's taken over, I believe.
All that tells you is that other teams have just been pretty inconsistent and they've just been moderately average.
And that's masked Arsenal's failings in many ways. The fact they were still able to finish in the top six last season was largely because of the deficiencies of the teams around them rather than anything they
Which
did.
Which is
they
the same thing that's going to happen this season.
They should have finished in the top four last season.
Yeah, I mean,
at the end of the season, they lost at home to Crystal Palace, didn't they? They dropped points at home to Brighton. It was there for the taking. They didn't take it. They were an absolute disgrace in that Europa League final. I think Unai Emery's a dead man walking.
They were completely outplayed by a superior team, make no mistake, Europa League final. But Chelsea were magnificent in that
for the first half hour.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you go back to the Wolves game, they had 25 shots, Wolves. And if you see for the goal, Ceballos just doesn't switch on. So that, a lot of it is down to when they don't have the ball, obviously. That's their big problem. Have they got that grit, that desire when they don't have it? It seems to be. It's just all about when they have the ball.
And Leicester do have that and they have the desire. They're going to be at the King Power. It's going to be a sellout. It's going to be a great noise. Arsenal aren't particularly good on their travels. And they've got to face Jamie Vardy, whose economy is absolutely brilliant. He's scored 10 goals from 21 shots this season, which is a much better conversion rate than even Sergio Aguero.
It's a home banker. I can't see anywhere. And I was speaking to an Arsenal fan actually on the way into the studio and he said, we are going to get obliterated. And I can't see any other outcome.
Well, I was just going to say, all those goals, 9-1 touch, right? There's only one more than one touch, which was the goal against Southampton when he cut inside Yoshida. Mm. Three headers, four left foots, three right foots. And he is like the ultimate centre forward. He really is the ultimate striker that England could do with.
But he's not available.
And you've got to remember, he doesn't have Riyad Mahrez behind him.
Yeah.
And he contributed something like seven goals before he left.
But he does have James Maddison. Okay, next up, Watford. Can they turn Norwich into mellow yellow?
The Premier League's bottom two meet on Friday at Carrow Row with just 4 points from a combined 10 games between them, placing them in 19th and 20th respectively going into this weekend. The win over Manchester City seems like a different season for the Canaries at this point, whose injury problems continue to hamper what could have been a successful season, though many of the walking wounded have now returned to training. The goals have dried up as well, with Teemu Pukki scoring just once from his last 19 shots, while the other end has been leaking, with 12 conceded in their last five. As for Watford, well, they've not even got a famous win over the champions to hold on to from this season, and after 11 games have no wins, the last team to do that was QPR, and they went down. Quique Sanchez-Flores has tried to build from the back, but it seems they've all but stopped trying to score goals. Gerard Deulofeu's penalty was all they could muster against Chelsea, having drawn a blank in three of their last five matches. A loss for the Hornets here, and they could start to look adrift at the bottom.
Thanks to Tom Rennie. He'll be back a little bit later on. This is Tasty, 15 miles separating Wolves and Aston Villa. And we have at the Villa View and at Talking Wolves to give us our talking points this week on our Twitter takeover. Thank you very much for your contribution. We'll get right into this, starting off with at Talking Wolves.
Hello, my name is Dave from Talking Wolves and these are some of my big talking points ahead of Wolves' big game against Aston Villa this weekend. And firstly, in terms of creating chances, it's been a difficult season for Wolves, at times being the lowest ranked side for chances created, but on Saturday against Arsenal we had 25 shots, which is the same amount of our previous three Premier League games put together, so the change in tactic and the change in style definitely worked there. Diogo Jota, he was the key man when we faced off against Villa at Molineux a couple of years ago in the Championship. He's suspended for the Europa League game this week, so he should be fresh and fighting for that game on Sunday, and he looked a real handful against Arsenal last weekend as well. And finally, it's been a very much a season of two halves for both of these teams. If there was the Premier League table based on first half results, Aston Villa would have the joint most, whilst Wolves would have the joint fewest, and in a table based on second half results, Wolves would be second in the Premier League. So really, really differing halves for both teams.
Cheers, Dave. Thank you very much for that. He talked about those chances that you mentioned in the Arsenal game, David Connolly. Will Villa give them that sort of opportunity, that room, that number of chances? Because they're quite an open team as well.
Yeah, they are. I think they will. And Wolves are going great guns at the minute. You know, obviously trying to balance Europa League is always going to be difficult. And they have struggled. But, you know, their form has certainly got much improved. I mean, they brought 3,000 fans to the Emirates. I mean, they were fantastic. It's a great football club. This will be an epic game. So I think the form at times can go out the window. This just, I imagine, will be a really fast, high-tempo game. Both sides will think that they can win, and both sides are in pretty good form. And I think both of them are going to have a good season.
Let's move on to the At Villa view. Their three talking points, starting off with the rivalry, because according to him and the Villa fans, the Wolves-Villa rivalry isn't the massive thing that maybe the guys from Molineux want it to be. He says here, they finished ahead of us twice in the last 25 years or whatever. Fair play to them. Good side. However, it isn't the big rivalry they push. We will always be the big boys of the West Midlands. I suppose Wolves will be determined to sort of prove that's not the case, won't they?
Yeah, although historically Wolves' arch rivals have always been and always will be West Bromwich Albion. It's a bit like down on the South Coast. My regular patch, Southampton against Bournemouth. Bournemouth fans have tried to whip it up, but actually, as we saw earlier this season, Southampton against Portsmouth is still the number one game on the South Coast. But listen, there's a lot of clubs in the Midlands, and they're all vying for that position of supremacy. Wolves, of course, have had it in recent seasons with what they did in the Premier League and qualifying for the Europa League. But like David, I've been quite impressed with Aston Villa. I thought they put a really good shift in against Liverpool. I still worry for them where the goals are coming from. I'm not convinced that Wesley is someone who's going to hit the back of the net regularly enough. They're going to stay up, and that is an achievement, but I don't see them finishing above Wolves.
He's massive, Wesley. Absolutely huge. And he's built brilliantly, so muscular. He looks very strong, but he doesn't bully anyone. And one of the big problems that they had when they went to Manchester City the other week was when they'd send the ball up to him, he didn't push anybody out of the way. I mean, he was quite easy to knock off the ball.
Yeah, he reminds me of the form of Allaire at West Ham at the minute. They're both pretty similar, you know, not holding the ball up, really struggling to get in the game, struggling for goals. But I think that in and around him, he's got players who are really exciting. And look, they've had a tough run of Gainesville, obviously Man City, Liverpool. It eases somewhat. Look, this will be a tough one away from home. But after that, they've got Newcastle, a little bit resurgent. You think, well, you know, I think these are the two games they might need points from, certainly away. Something like a point here for Villa, I think, would be brilliant.
OK, he also goes to mention at the Villa view, Jack Grealish, ready for England. It's going to happen sooner or later. No other English player plays like him. I think we probably agree with that, although he's injured at the moment and might not be available for those internationals that are upcoming. A new breed of promoted club is his final point. Wolves and Villa, two examples of promoted teams playing the right way and wanting to compete in the Premier League. Is the gap between the bottom half of the Premier League and the top Championship sides that big, really? And I think that's an interesting point, actually.
Do you know what I think it is? I think there are probably eight established Premier League teams. I would include Newcastle on that list, Southampton, Bournemouth to a lesser extent, who are petrified of relegation. Mm. And that comes across in their performances, particularly against the big guns. Whereas what Aston Villa have done, and Sheffield United, who we'll probably talk about later, there's a fearlessness about them. They want to compete. They're not afraid to go toe-to-toe with these big clubs, as we've seen from Sheffield United at home to Liverpool and at home to Arsenal. We saw from Villa against Liverpool. And I think it's been a breath of fresh air. It makes it a much better division.
Yeah, Aston Villa are certainly falling into that category. And then they held their own against Manchester City the previous week and then went to Liverpool and then entertained Liverpool and gave them a scare.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the concern for them is the amount of points they've lost from being ahead. Yeah, they could be much higher. I think it's something like 11 points they've lost. So they could be doing much, much better. But I think Dean Smith will be delighted. You can really see, a bit like Chrissy Wilder at Sheffield U, the imprint he's having on that side, even in the Premier League. It's clear the style of play, how they're going to go about it. I guess, you know, Aston Villa probably got more cultured players. Possibly, you might say that.
Really?
Possibly.
More cultured than Diego Jota?
Sheffield U. But I think that, you know, they're both going to really add to the Premier League this season.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Right, let's get back to game day.
Second chance to Liverpool, it's Pulisic, hat-trick! Near post header from Christian Pulisic, it's a perfect hat-trick! Left foot, right foot, header, and the American gets his first senior goals in English football, and he makes it a hat-trick.
Pulls out on the left-hand side for Palace. They've run into the area. Batshuayi protecting the ball at the edge of the box, being helped out by MacArthur. Now here's Andros Townsend at the edge of the box. Goes down! Penalty kick! Powered by Proper, who put the challenge in. Townsend went down. Penalty for Luka Milivojevic to take to get Palace back level on TalkSport. Arcs his run up and sends the keeper the wrong way, and Palace are level.
Chelsea against Crystal Palace is our lunchtime kickoff for this week. 12:30 live on TalkSport and across the world on Premier League Live. Game day starts at the Bridge. From the thrills and spills of the Champions League, and what a fantastic game it was on Tuesday night, to another one of those games that Chelsea have to win if they want to cement a place in the top four, in my opinion. And I think they've done this really well recently because they've played Burnley, won, Southampton, won, Watford, won, all negotiated well by Chelsea. How much tougher will Crystal Palace be, though?
That's interesting, because I did the game against Watford for TalkSport, and Chelsea, don't get me wrong, they were good, but it reminded me of Chelsea at the start of the season, where they were good for maybe patches of it, like a good 45, maybe a good hour, but they dipped in and out.
But they could have really won that game a lot more if Ben Foster hadn't made so many saves.
They could, but they were really sloppy at times. Really sloppy, gave the ball away, allowed Watford to get back into it. Watford actually were in the ascendancy the last, say, 15 minutes of the first half and at the start of the second, but they just conceded. And then after that, obviously, they went for broke and there was a few more holes. And obviously, look, the quality they possess going forward is absolutely outstanding. In particular, the two central midfielders. And when you watch those two close up, Jorginho and Kovacic, they're like metronomes.
We mentioned it last week on the podcast, right? Last year, these two were getting absolutely battered. But this year, they've been fantastic. The one thing about Kovacic, which I really like, is the way he carries the ball and drags the team up a pitch. He can open things up for you because he's so good at dribbling with the ball and getting through very tight spaces.
They're so calm as well, on the ball, so calm. And look, they were really impressive. Out of all the players, you know, all the attacking talent, those were the two. And forget the assist from Jorginho, which was out of this world. I mean, it really was. Yeah. But just their general play, they were always on the move. They very rarely stood still and just gave Chelsea a sort of platform to build off. The only concern is that, again, they conceded.
Well, they wouldn't have conceded without VAR, would they?
No, but I think it was a penalty. And it might have been soft, but it was a penalty. He did make contact.
Well, I think it's one of those that divides opinion, because I spoke to a Premier League official this week who said to me, I wasn't sure that it was a penalty. And then obviously it had been given by Anthony Taylor, who was the VAR. Was it Anthony Taylor the VAR? Was Martin Atkinson the VAR? No, Mike Dean was the VAR, wasn't it? Anthony Taylor was the referee. He didn't give the penalty. And then it was overturned by the VAR. Now, you're only supposed to overturn it if it is a clear and obvious error by the on-field referee. But the on-field referee had seen it and then decided it wasn't enough for a penalty.
No, I mean,
was it that clear and obvious that he should have overturned it?
Oh, no, absolutely not. When we're looking at it first time, but then on the replays that they show you, yeah, it does make contact. And you could say now with the advent of VAR, it was a penalty. But concerning for maybe Lampard and his team is, you know, lots of people say, well, why can't they challenge for the title? Well, it might be because
they conceded four goals on Tuesday night. Well, ridiculous goals.
And yeah, putting that aside, they've conceded 17 already in the league.
It's just crazy.
And when they won the league, I think it was 0-4, 405 under Mourinho with Lampard, they only conceded 15 the whole season.
Mason Mount injured right ankle for a second time. It was initially hurt in the Valencia game, and then he had a problem in the Champions League game in the week. How much of a miss is he going to be?
Yeah, clearly a big miss, because he has been one of the real success stories of the season, and it's a worry when a young player starts to pick up these injuries on a regular basis at the start of the season. Maybe it's just his body adjusting to the rigours of the Premier League. We shall see. But I think you've been a bit harsh on Chelsea, because I think their supporters at the start of the season would have, if you just said you're going to finish in the top four, which of course is not guaranteed, but they've given themselves a great platform, they would have snapped your hands off of that. They're a young team. They're going to make mistakes. They're learning on the job in many ways. But the abiding emotion of Chelsea fans is what Frank has done, and what these fantastic young players who've really brought into it, they've brought the feel-good factor back to Stamford Bridge. And a lot of people have fallen
back in love
with Chelsea once again. A lot of their fans who were disillusioned under previous managers.
I mean, before the season started, I was championing him and saying they're going to have a great season. Mm. All I'm saying is people are saying, could they win the league?
They can't win the league.
No one realistically thinks that that's possible, do they?
No. It's Liverpool or Manchester City. After this weekend, it will probably be just Liverpool.
Just one of them, yeah.
What about Crystal Palace? Roy Hodgson has done a reasonable job in charge of them, but their results have got a little bit sticky as the opponents have increased in terms of stature. And, you know, they got a point at Arsenal, but maybe that's not as much of an achievement as maybe
they're a special team, Arsenal. Special team.
Well, look.
it was always going to happen for Crystal Palace. What they did at the start of the season, Bournemouth did it a couple of years ago when they were eighth after 10 games. They took advantage of a kind fixture list.
Yeah, and this has happened to Crystal Palace before, actually, under Alan Pardew. And at the same time, he had the same points as Roy Hodgson had before they went into the Man City game and ended up getting sacked before New Year. It can change very quickly.
It can do. And the worry for them is obviously they've scored about the same amount of goals as Jamie Vardy. And that puts so much pressure on you. It really does. And, you know, some of the marking, certainly on Sionku for the goal was really poor. Gary Cahill taking his eye off, really just focusing on Johnny Evans. Yeah. But I guess when you don't score that many, it puts an awful lot of pressure on you. And I think they really need to sign in January. They really need to strengthen. I think it's going to be a difficult game for them. IU's form has kind of tailed off. They've only really got Benteke coming in as a backup, and that's just not going to be enough for them. And you look at what Michy Batshuayi's doing, you think, well, you know, could they have turned that into a permanent in the summer? I don't know. Did they try hard enough? Did
not sure Chelsea would have sold with the embargo, would they?
They couldn't have sold because they didn't have enough players themselves. So it probably would have been a tough one to ask. But they'll probably end up maybe losing players in January rather than buying players, I think, Crystal Palace. We shall see. Might depend on something that happens at the Court of Arbitration for Sport. Talking of pressure, things looking rocky for Pellegrini. He should have held on to Adrian!
The meeting of the boys in claret and blue at Turf Moor could have come at the worst or best time, depending on how you look at it. Both teams' recent form has been poor, with the home side losing their last three, the visitors losing three of their last four. What's gone wrong at Burnley? Well, to put it simply, they are uncharacteristically conceding soft goals, and far too many of them. The spanking by Sheffield United would have been hard to take. But manager Sean Dyche won't panic. He says only hard work can put things right, and definitely don't dive, all right? Whatever you do, it's only going to set him off, whatever the result. At West Ham, the criticism of Manuel Pellegrini's team selection and tactics against Newcastle, where they should have been 5-0 down at half-time, has been fierce. If there's one thing we didn't expect from one of the league's most experienced bosses, it's rookie errors like playing Pablo Zabaleta against pace. At the other end, Pellegrini can't find a formula to suit striker Sebastian Haller, or Manuel Lanzini, or Felipe Anderson, or Andrei Yarmolenko for that matter. So it could be a good match for both, as they're facing weak opposition. Shame they're both so bad at the minute themselves.
Tom Rennie with his assessment of Burnley against West Ham. Let's move on to our Dream Team section of the programme. And Andrew Butler is here. Hello.
Hello, Sam. How are you doing?
I'm good. Jonjo Shelvey scored his first ever direct free kick in the Premier League with his 31st attempt. On that basis, you're not going to rush to put him in your team, are you?
No, you won't. Similarly with the 0.1%, my favourite stat on Dream Team of players who don't or have picked Jonjo Shelvey this season, 13 points all over doubled his points for the season. He's now on 24, got 13 points in the game. Quite an impressive performance from Shelvey, but it would have been brilliant if that goal, that shot that he had, which was the outside of the boot, the one that came off the crossbar, that would have been a lovely one. But decent enough, a good performance. But the person that I also, as I always come into the studio and talk about, Miguel Almirón.
Yes.
Almost got close again, didn't he?
Almost got close. This is what we're... This is
progression.
This is what we're reduced to now.
Yeah.
He almost got close.
1,677 minutes for Newcastle without a goal or assist since his arrival at St James's Park. So don't pick him, as per usual. Jethro Willems is a decent shout for Newcastle. Newcastle kind of slim pickings across the board, but Willems in the game at 1.7 million.
Sam Maximin, what about him? Surely Sam Maximin was brilliant, wasn't he?
He was brilliant.
If he could finish, he would be sensational.
Yeah. Yeah. He should have scored, shouldn't he, when he was clean
three times.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah, and I think that's probably his problem. He's only been picked by 0.1% of teams as well.
Sam Maximin. But he carries
that could have been
ball.
Him.
It
could have been.
Yeah, he picked himself. He carries the ball really well,
yeah,
and he runs for miles and miles and miles with it at his feet. And then, but by the time he gets to the penalty area, he looks a bit cream crackered.
Yeah, he looks a bit like Miguel Almirón actually. By the time he gets to the penalty area, I don't know why I've got such beef with Almirón. He seems like a thoroughly nice bloke.
Yeah, I don't know why you have either. Yeah, that's unlike you. You're usually so friendly. Maybe it's because as a 6'3" wing back as you are. Maybe you're scared of his presence. I don't know.
I would not be able to tackle him.
Newcastle 15th, but they have played already this season. Chelsea, Spurs, Arsenal, Liverpool and Leicester. They've done well enough, haven't they? When they start playing those around them, do you think they'll pick up more points, David?
Well, I think they're certainly coming into form, and Bruce looked much happier, didn't he, after the game, just saying, you know, hopefully now they'll take to me a bit like they did to Rafa, because he knows he's got a tough act to follow there. But he's given it a good go. Look, he's got a lot of his players now back fit, which he didn't have, so he's had to cope with that. He doesn't have a number nine, really, of any note to get him some goals. So I think he's just struggling through until January, and then hopefully he'll get some additions in January, and that will really help him.
No real promise of that though from Mike Ashley just yet. They take on Bournemouth this weekend, who won against Manchester United at the Vitality Stadium a week ago. I was down there for that. I thought Bournemouth played really well defensively. Steve Cook was absolutely immense.
And Ake.
Yeah, very good, both of them.
Steve Cook's another one who's only been picked by 0.1% of managers in the game at 1.9 million. Diego Rico, congratulations to him. He's become the first Bournemouth player to hit 50 points this season so far on Dream Team.
Takes corners,
takes a few set pieces as well. He's the sixth highest scoring defender on the game this season. He's still only 1.8 million as well, so definitely worth a look, Rico. And I agree with you. Bournemouth look really good against a fairly mediocre Man United team.
I know this Dream Team is fairly new, but actually when I was at West Ham, we had a version of this.
Only about 25 years, yeah.
Well, okay. Say, take us back.
It's on the verge of something special, actually.
Yeah,
it's
it is, yeah.
Compared to, like,
let's
world.
Go 15 yeah. years ago, right? And I was at West Ham. Yeah. Alan Pardew was the manager.
Okay.
And after the game, you would get points for your involvement in the game. But it invariably centred around just what Alex said there, if you're on set pieces. So,
and marks out of 10.
So Michael Carrick, for example, would always be top of the tree because he took every set piece, and it was a version of Dream Team, which I didn't really know at the time.
He was quite a good player, though, that Michael Carrick, wasn't he?
He certainly
went on,
was, yeah.
Did quite well after at West Ham, didn't
David,
he?
David, did Pards give his own mark as well for how good a manager he was?
He probably did. I'm sure it'd be a 10 every week.
Good. But.
Now, just when you thought that Rashford and Martial were going to, rejuvenate your dream team, Bournemouth gave them a bit of a custard pie. Who can inspire a second South Coast splat this week?
Well, Neil Mopai has been really impressive for Brighton. We spoke very early on at the start of the season about whether or not these sort of strikers will be able to
step up from the championship.
And he's now Brighton's top scorer in Dream Team so far this season, 2.3 million, 34 points, similar in a way to Newcastle. There's not a great deal of standout players, but Mopai is looking lively. He's keeping on scoring the 7+ rating points of 3 points, and it's he looks pretty good. Defensively, they've been okay. I just can't believe that they're eighth in the league. This is Man United versus Brighton, and United are 10th. Brighton are eighth. Like, really impressive.
What about Trossard? Yeah, absolutely, because I was at the Amex and...
The name on everybody's lips.
Yes, he was absolutely amazing against Everton. Then, obviously, he scored again at the weekend and was really involved. So, I imagine...
Yeah, Trossard's in the game at 2.4 million. He scored 10 points last weekend. He's only got a total of 23 so far this season. Obviously, it doesn't help that Brighton only play in the Premier League, whereas Dream Team takes into account all the other competitions. But Trossard, I agree, was really impressive. And I mean, if he's going to be one of their key men for... I don't know what we're saying about Brighton. Are they still hoping to stay out this season?
Or the centre-halves. What about the centre-halves? Because obviously they always crop up with goals. Webster's nicked one and...
Duffy, obviously. Duffy got star man last week. Yeah. 13 points as well.
They must be good for a few points.
Yeah, worth it.
Webster got an own goal the other week, didn't he?
Yes, he did. It was against Everton, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Richarlison one that hit him on the head and then went in. Oh, yeah. He was credited with an own goal for that.
Big Dan Byrne, the biggest left-back you've ever seen. I know you make a joke about Andrew's height for a wing-back, but Attenborough would have a field day just watching Dan Byrne go up and down the wing. It's a documentary in itself.
Are you saying that I'm freakish?
Maybe.
He's not saying you're freakish. I mean, have you seen him? We have to make him sit down when we do the preview videos. A quick word on Manchester United then. As a Manchester United fan out and out, who would you pick in your dream team?
Well, Martial. Because when he plays well, United win. That's the statistic, isn't it? But I don't know what to make of United. You think they've made progress and then they go and turn in a performance like that against Bournemouth. I'd pick Trossard as a Man United fan.
There you go. All right. Thank you very much, Andrew. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Let's turn our attention to Southampton against Everton. Here's Tom Rennie.
Southampton have recovered well from their record-breaking beating at the hands of Leicester. Sure, they've lost both games since, away against Man City, but it could have been worse, all right? They could have been playing at home in front of the traumatised locals. Just 1 point from five games at St Mary's is the worst start to a Premier League season for any club since Birmingham City in 2005, who went down come the end of the campaign. Can this side get on the front foot against Everton? Will the fans get behind them if they go a goal behind? Will they even show up? Everton are winless in eight Premier League away games, losing each of the last four, so might be decent opponents for the Saints to face. The point against Tottenham for the Toffees, well, that was really hard earned. Just ask Andre Gomez. Can they use it as a catalyst to turn their ailing season around? They sit just outside the relegation zone at kickoff, 3 points above Southampton.
Now, before their midweek trip to Belgrade, Spurs had won two of their last 10 matches. They sat 11th in the Premier League, still do going into the weekend. Harry Kane, with his sharp new haircut, says he can't put his finger on it. Not the haircut, their form. Now, you can bet that Chris Wilder has worked out what their problems are, and he'll have a plan for it, won't he?
Yeah, this is a tough game for Tottenham. At the start of the season, you'd have thought home to Sheffield United would be a home banker. It isn't going to be a home banker for anybody. I did the Everton-Spurs game for TalkSport live. And listen, it's been overshadowed by the horrendous injury for Andre Gomez and the Son red card, which correctly has been rescinded. But what that has done is disguise the fact that Spurs were really poor. Two really poor teams, actually, Tottenham and Everton. All right, they scored a good goal. And I think Spurs fans will be hoping that it kickstarts Dele Alli's season. And you could see with the celebration that he was there, you know, sticking the proverbial two fingers up to his critics. So, listen, good luck to him, because he badly needs to find some form to work his way into that European Championship
squad.
And as
funny as that celebration was, where he went down and slept on the floor at Goodison Park in reference to something that happened in a newspaper or was reported in a newspaper, that was reported in the summer. Most people have forgotten about that, hadn't they? Because it was so long ago.
Which just shows how long he's been poor for, really, doesn't it?
He's been planning that for ages.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, I think that said more about his form than it did about his critics.
I agree. But it was just a strange performance from Tottenham. It wasn't a Maurizio Pochettino-like performance. They were timid. They were poor in possession. You can see the confidence has been drained from them. Before that game, they'd lost 19 of their last 43 matches. That is incredible.
But it was a rubbish game. A lot of the reason and the blame for that lies at the heart of VAR,
Absolutely.
Doesn't it? I mean, and it was... I mean, I don't want to go down on Martin Atkinson, who I think is a very good referee, but I think that the VAR did not help him at all during that game. And actually, I think all of the decisions that went to VAR were wrong. I think every single one of them was wrong. And even speaking to officials afterwards, some officials believe that they're wrong as well. And the reason for that is that it's actually inconsequential that it hits, it comes a little bit off Yerry Mina's shoulder before it hits Dele Alli's hand. The fact is his hand is above his head, which is punishable by a penalty.
Absolutely, but it still took, what, 26 replays?
Oh, I don't know. Just ridiculous.
26, absolutely incredible. 3 minutes, I mean...
I was in a pub, I had three pints while they were doing that review.
Yeah, I think that would have been a wise call for a lot of the fans. And I'm sure they'd rather have done that, to be honest.
But also it's the communication issue as well, isn't it? You know, there's not enough clear communication about that. Look, I understand that the other thing is a bit of a problem is that you and I might look at two different incidents or the same incident and have two different views on whether or not a decision should be a penalty or not a penalty. Now, if you and I are sitting together watching it, we might have a conversation. The very fact that we've had a conversation and both of us aren't 100% sure would mean that it's not a clear and obvious error, correct?
Yep.
Now, the problem here is that when a VAR and an assistant VAR are watching these replays, it should be pointed out that the assistant VAR is a non-speaking role, so he cannot give his opinion on the matters in hand. So it is solely down to the opinion of one person, and that person then has to decide whether or not it should be overruled.
But that's because obviously what they don't want is consensus, because consensus would possibly lead to whichever one has their opinion being the main lead opinion. So I guess they want impartiality, just want one person who's qualified to do that role. But, so I can understand
that. But if
that,
it's a subjective decision, how do you know whether or not it's clear and obvious?
That's up to that man who's obviously making that decision, like the man in the middle. They've got the man in front of the TV screen. I guess that's where I can only see how it works.
We've strayed into VAR here, but because it is important, I think, that we got that information out about the non-speaking role of the assistant VAR, which I must admit I wasn't aware of.
I think Sanchez fouled Richarlison. That should have been a penalty.
Yeah, it should have been a penalty.
I don't think the Son one was.
Possibly not.
I think it was, because I don't think Yerry Mina attempts to play the ball. He throws himself into Son. I think Son's punished just because he got dived afterwards. He certainly was impacted by Yerry Mina, who basically made a tackle with his body.
Yeah. But he didn't go down at that point. He waited and went down a couple of seconds later. And when you do that, you're always causing yourself a problem. But you're right. Certainly the rest of them 100% agree. And again, it's this refusal by referees to come and have a look themselves on the monitor.
Which they did in the Champions League in midweek.
Why have we got monitors at 20 Premier League grounds? Because they haven't been used at all. 110 games?
Yep.
Not one visit to the monitor. It's nonsense.
Which is odd. Anyway, we should concentrate on the game itself. We've mentioned that it could be difficult for Tottenham Hotspur this week. And one of the reasons it might be is Sheffield United striker Lees Mousset, who's been involved in 5 goals in his last 3 Premier League appearances, 2 goals, 3 assists, one more than in his first 63 appearances in the competition down in Bournemouth. And having watched him at Bournemouth, are you surprised by how well he has done at Sheffield United?
A little bit, I've got to be honest. When I found out that he was going to Sheffield United and for the fee that they were paying for him, I thought Bournemouth had done a really good bit of business there. But he looks a bit fitter and a bit sharper and a bit more determined to make an impact there, because I don't necessarily think he always conducted himself in the right manner off the pitch, shall we say, at Bournemouth. So Chris Wilder has clearly got into him. I think he made a comment about his lack of fitness when he first signed. He's worked on that. And listen, there is a player there. Eddie Howe always had belief in his ability, but I don't think he had belief in his ability to manage his body in the right way. If he can do that, I think he'll have an impact.
He's certainly, I think, playing under the right manager, because Christian Wilder, if you remember, with Leon Clark, he was basically a journeyman centre-forward, and he turned him into a prolific centre-forward for him for a couple of seasons. And I think he's got that about him. He's another superb man manager. Tells it like it is. He's honest, like he was with Henderson. He's not afraid to make subs, make changes. I think Spurs are going to find this really tough, like they did against Newcastle, up against a back three, stroke a back five, but this one's in really good form.
Keep off the greasy chip butties is probably the advice.
Maybe I should do that.
I was going to say. Okay, it's time for the commentator's curse. It's where we put the mockers on players this week by giving a statistical reason why they should do brilliantly. You know what it's like. You say someone's fantastic, the next thing they do is give away a penalty for Gerard Deulofeu. I started ranting on Twitter this week about how great Kovacic and Jorginho had been, and then all of a sudden Jorginho kicked Deulofeu and gave a penalty away.
I saw those tweets. I didn't know if they were you or Ryland, but yeah, glad you cleared that up.
Okay, I'm going to put the commentary curse on Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. I'm going to see him on Saturday on game day, 5:30 this week on TalkSport and around the world on Premier League Live. Now, did you know that since his first away Premier League appearance in February 2018, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang has scored 16 away goals, the third most goals away from home behind Harry Kane and Jamie Vardy. However, he's never scored an away goal on a Saturday. He scored two on a Monday. He scored two on a Wednesday. He scored 12 on a Sunday. But never has he scored an away goal on a Saturday. Until, possibly, this weekend.
Wow. Mm. That is a great stat. I think the run might go on.
What have you got for me, David?
Well, I've got a...
Always well-researched.
Yes, always well-researched.
You always put a lot of time on this, don't you?
Especially this bit of the show.
Yeah, this is my favourite part, this one. Another centre-forward. I've been trawling around, seeing what I can find, and I've come up with a really good one.
Oh, go for it.
So, Chris Wood of Burnley.
Oh, yes, Chris Wood.
He scored in all four of his games against West Ham.
Ooh.
And who did Burnley have this weekend?
West Ham.
Good knowledge, good knowledge.
That is particularly good.
Thank you.
Alex, what have you got for me?
Yeah, well, seeing as we're in the presence of a former superstar striker and David Connolly, I thought I'd go down the striker route as well. Harry Kane is the focus of my attention. If he scores this weekend, then he will go above Martin Chivers as the third highest scorer in Tottenham's history. He scored 16 times in 17 games for club and country. Staggering.
That is impressive.
And you do wonder, where would Tottenham be without him?
Yeah, indeed.
In the bottom three, probably.
They're not that far away from it now, to be honest with you. Right, OK, thank you very much for your company today. Really enjoyed that. We've got game day this week from three Premier League games, starting off at Stamford Bridge. Live commentary on TalkSport and TalkSport 2 of back-to-back Premier League games, finishing at Leicester against Arsenal. I promise you that will be something special. Across the globe on Premier League Live, you'll have all the best matches as well. If you'd like to subscribe to Game Day, you can do it via Acast, Spotify, iTunes or Google Podcasts. We'll see you next week. And remember, the record book and the Game Day verdict are all out this weekend. Make sure you tune in.
That was a Game Day Premier League preview show, a TalkSport exclusive podcast.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.